Lowe's knows that free makes everything better. That's why our rewards members get free standard shipping on the things they need and want, starting at Silver Key status every day. Savings for rewards members add up fast, so why wait? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help, you save. Not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. James Holland, the historian, his new book is Brothers in Arms, following one legendary tank regiment from D-Day to VE Day. We're approaching the Siegfried Line and then the Rhine River, which is its own barrier to the Allied advance towards Germany. James, what was Operation Veritable?
Yeah, so this is the big Canadian Army push to cross through the Reichswald and take the towns of Cleve and Gok, in cahoots, incidentally, with General Bill Simpson's U.S. 9th Army on their right-hand flank, and Operation Grenade, and then close up to the River Rhine. So this is clearing the Rhineland to the west of the River Rhine, of the German territory west of the River Rhine. And it's a major, major operation, although a lot of British Second Army units are transferred into the Canadian Army. It is a Canadian Army-led operation, of which the Sherwood Rangers are part. And it's just, you know, it's just, what you get, John, is just this sort of mounting sense of the relentlessness of it. I mean, we've touched on Point 103 and crossing the Nuoro and Geel, but that's only half of it. I mean, there's a whole load of other operations that the Sherwood Rangers are involved in that we haven't mentioned because of time and all the rest of it. It's just relentless, and I think that's the thing that really struck me when I was doing this work. And Operation Veritable was a major, major operation, and it's very destructive, and lots of people get hurt and killed. And yet, somehow, they just keep going. And the other thing that's remarkable about the Sherwood Rangers, they never seem to lose sight of their humanity, you know, and that's why just after capturing Cleve and, you know, the ruins of this ancient medieval city, they're going out the other side. And Stanley Christopherson notes in his diary that he's seen his first snowdrop. And I just think it's, you know, how can you not applaud a man like that who, despite all the huge weights of responsibility on his shoulders, a huge amount of things he's got to think about, the incredible destruction and brutality that he's witnessed, he still has it in his mind to note in his daily journal that he's spotted a snowdrop. I think that's rather wonderful.
Spring approaches. It is now late March 1945. Montgomery is in charge of the 21st Army Group, which I've written down from my notes here, British 2nd Army, Canadian 1st, U.S. 9th. I believe there are other elements attached. And the big operation is to cross the Rhine. The Americans punch through to the south, the Remagen That's Bridge, right. But they need to cross here as well because this is big war. Everybody's pushing across. Operation Plunder and Operation Varsity together. Where are the Sherwood Rangers in this operation, James?
Yeah, so there's a two-pronged attack for Operation Plunder, which is the land bit of crossing the River Rhine, and Varsity is the airborne operation, which is a joint Anglo-US airborne operation. And Plunder, there's two crossing points, and the Sherwood Rangers are part of the northern crossing point at a place called Rees, which is, again, it's just south of the North Dutch border. And they managed to get across without kind of too many hiccups, to be perfectly honest. But again, they're in the fire, you know, they're in the front line. They're kind of leading the way. And once across the river as well, it is their job to work with the infantry and create a bridgehead. And although Germany is clearly beaten, there are still a number of troops with enough decent weapons, with enough Panzerfaust, which are these small kind of sort of like bazookas, you know, kind of handheld, you know, anti-tank kind of missiles, and they have another brutal, bloody time of it.
They have been out of the line for a moment before the crossing of the Rhine,
and yeah, for about
some
a couple of weeks.
Some of them got to Brussels, and one wonderful story is Peter Mellows, who meets a young woman named Simone. Who is Peter right. Mellows?
So Peter Mellows is he's arrived in October 1945. 44. He's one of the replacement officers. He gets a troop commander in A Squadron. And he's just a really thoroughly decent guy. You know, he's a young man who he loses his very, very best friend, a guy he's kind of trained with and joined the Sherwood Rangers with, Guylan Kirkan. And he's one of those people who realizes that, you know, it's not worth getting too close to anyone because you don't want to have any kind of emotional attachments because chances are they're going to die or get wounded. And that's just more upsetting if you know them intimately. So, you know, he confronts the situation he finds himself in with amazing amount of courage. And he's one of the guys who, yeah, he's on leave in Belgium just before Operation Plunder, and he meets this lovely, lovely Belgian girl and is really quite sort of smitten by her and gets invited back to dinner with her parents and is basically treated very well, even though he's in his battle dress, his kind of armored, you know, his tank tunic, which looks a bit smelly and oily by this stage. And then once across the River Rhine, he's then absolutely at the forefront of an assault by A Squadron, in which they help the infantry get to a Dutch town called Dinxperlo and see off a counterattack by the Germans. And he's then involved in an action which is actually bizarrely caught on camera. So there's this series of photographs of his troop moving into action to take on this blocking position by some German Fallschirmjägers, some German paratroopers. And you actually see in this sequence of photograph one of his troop actually getting hit by a Panzerfaust and brewing up.
This is C Squadron? He was C Squadron?
He was A Squadron.
A Squadron.
He was A Squadron, yeah, yeah. And that's at a place, well, I can't remember the name of the, is it Venlo? I can't remember the name of the town, but it's a blocking position, and he goes through this wood with his troop and gets surprised by these Fallschirmjäger, these German paratroopers who are dug in, and as I say, one of his troop gets hit. He and his tank immediately reverses so that he can traverse his tank gun down so that he can hit them and also to get out of range of any Panzerfaust. And manages to take them all out, but it's too late for his comrades. And again, he's a very brave man. I mean, these guys just keep going, and it's remarkable, really.
I have a note here that this is April. Easter was April 1st in 1945. Yeah, and there's a sense that the war is over. The Germans can't possibly win this. And yet there's a frustration among the Sherwood Rangers as to why this continues, why they continue to lose casualties. And before we get on to the tragedy of Stuart Hills and his best friend, Dennis Elmore, the note that I made to myself, James, for you to explain, is a young man named McDonald who gets extremely angry at the German POWs, the people who come out saying Handhook, you know, who hold up their hands and white flags. What is he angry about? What is the frustration they're feeling, James?
Yeah, well, there's this sort of, you know, after they've crossed the River Rhine and cleared the bridgehead around, then suddenly there is another kind of great surge forward, and they're going along this single road, which is still there to this day. And basically what happens is it's flat country in this sort of northern part of Germany. And even today, when you're traveling through it, you go through this town, then there's a gap, there's fields, and then suddenly there's a dense pine forest. And then there's another gap, and there's another town, and then there's another dense pine forest. And they know that they've been canalized through this wood. They have to use this one single road that's going through this forest. And they know that at some point there'll be a tree down blocking the road that they'll have to pause and get out. And they know that at that moment, guys will jump out with Panzerfaust and shoot at them. And everyone's completely on edge. And of course, there's this one forest that they're going through, and that's exactly what happens. And the lead tank gets hit, and the commander's killed, and another guy loses his legs, and, you know, it's absolutely horrendous mess in there. And McDonald just gets, and then immediately afterwards, they capture the Germans. And McDonald's point is, you know, why the hell are you still fighting this war? You know, you can't win. You're completely defeated. Just throw down your weapons. And there is this visceral anger and frustration that with the end of the war in sight, they're still having to risk life and limb to take, you know, every town, every village. And it's all so pointless and so unnecessary. And, you know, you can absolutely understand his anger and frustration, I think.
Now, an incident that struck me as extremely vivid. This is Peter Mellows again. And there is a moment where there's a structure filled with what they believe are German troops. Yes. And they flank them and flush them out by opening fire. And the German troops run. And then they open up with Brownings and slaughter them, cut them all down. Who are they, James?
Well, they're kind of young SS troops, and they're just absolutely lambs to slaughter. You know, they're young sort of teenagers and stuff, and Volkssturm troops. There's an SS training camp nearby, and you know they're facing the wrong way basically. So they're expecting an attack on this crossroads coming from the west, and actually Peter Mellows and A Squadron with the infantry have come up behind them. They've come from the south and then around into this suburb of Bremen called Stur. And they come round behind them, and they just haven't seen them quick enough, and they're not well trained enough to be able to respond to this situation. So they're able to kind of just shoot them up and mow them down from behind. But immediately after that, some B Squadron tanks move up, and in the lead is Dennis Elmore, who's recently been the intelligence officer of regimental headquarters, and he's pleaded to have Sabre Squadron, you know, be part of a Sabre Squadron, one of the fighting tank squadrons, and given his own troop. And Stanley Christofferson relents and sends him back. And so as a troop commander, he's in the lead, and he pushes on north from this crossroads where Peter Mellows and co. have just sort of shot up this German position, and just rounds a corner, and Peter hears this huge bang and follows up afterwards. And basically Dennis Elmore's tank has been hit by an 88-millimeter gun and knocked out, and he's been killed, and all the crew bar, I think all the three guys in the turret have been killed, and the driver and the co-driver, the lap gunner, have been badly wounded. And Dennis Elmore is Stuart Hills's best friend. And at this point, Stuart Hills is the recce troop commander. And Dennis and Stuart have been best mates in school. They go to school together. They love sport. They love cricket. They've played in a key cricket match at the Lords, which is sort of a bit like the Yankee Stadium or something. You know, it's like the home of cricket in the UK. And they've joined up together. They've gone to Sandhurst. You know, they've gone to officer training place together. They've then gone to the tank training, Royal Armour Corps tank training together, and joined the Sherwood Rangers together. So they're super tight. And Stuart's parents are in the Far East. They've been in Singapore, and they get captured by the Japanese, and they're prisoners of the Japanese. And so he's perhaps a bit more dependent on his best friend than he might otherwise be. And he's absolutely distraught. And he writes this letter, which I came across, to Dennis Elmore's mother. I mean, he's just numb with grief when he hears what's happened to his best friend, because it's so close to the end of the war. It's the 19th of April, 1945. And it takes him a few days to kind of be able to write to Dennis Elmore's mother. And there is this line in it. He just says, I loved him more than anyone else in the world, and the bottom of my world has dropped out, you know. And you can just feel this palpable, raw grief. And funny enough, actually, someone then subsequently, after I wrote the book, someone wrote to me and said, I remember going to see as a boy. I lived in Kent, and I went to see Mr. and Mrs. Elmore, and Mrs. Elmore kept her son's room like a shrine to Dennis. And she said, I remember being taken up there, and everything was just as it was when he went off to war. It was incredibly tragic. And you know, it's just a reminder, isn't it, that war is not just statistics about it. It's about individuals and individual families and the ramifications of these terrible losses and the tragedies of war.
Brothers in Arms, One Legendary Tank Regiment's Bloody War from D-Day to VE Day. James Holland, the historian. I'm John Batch.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.